They say they're pro-choice, but they only want one choice, so that makes me think they're really not pro-choice. Abortion is not healthcare.
Welcome to the Edify podcast, where our guests share practical wisdom on living our faith in public. I'm Mary Fiorito. Thank you for joining us today. With us today on the Edify podcast is Dr. George Delgado. He's the president of the Steno Institute, which is a nonprofit devoted to pro-life research, but especially focusing on abortion pill reversal. When you think about abortion, at least up until recently, you think about a woman going to a clinic and receiving a surgical abortion. But now up to 60%, I think, of abortions are these medication abortions, these pill abortions, and they're not surgical. So can you explain the difference medically between the two?
Sure. So with surgical abortion, an instrument is introduced into the uterus of the mother to kill the preborn baby. Once the instrument enters the uterus, then it's over. With medical abortion or chemical abortion, a woman takes a drug that takes hours to days, usually, to kill her preborn baby. Now, it's given as a protocol with two different medications taken 48 hours apart. That 48 hours gives us a window of opportunity because some women change their minds and want a second chance at choice. And if that woman changes her mind, we have the ability now to reverse the effects of the first drug. It's called mifepristone, previously known as RU486. We can give progesterone to reverse the effects of the mifepristone and to save her baby, giving her a second chance at life.
How many women have you worked with personally, and what's the success rate percentage-wise?
Personally, in my practice, I've probably worked with 200 to 300 women who've reversed their medical abortions. And our published success rates with our high-dose oral protocols, which are best protocol, is 68%.
You know, so the abortion industry claims, to your point, that abortion pills are completely safe. And I've seen this more than once, comparing the safety profile to taking a Tylenol. So you've just mentioned that the complications are significant and not rare, and the side effects from chemical abortions also not, you know, significant and not rare. So are there any studies that, you know, have examined the number of women, for example, who go to emergency rooms after having complications from taking the abortion pill?
So those studies are very difficult to find because the doctors who take care of women who the abortionists are not required to report complications. And often when they go to the emergency department, the complications are reported as something different than related to an abortion, maybe just bleeding relating to pregnancy. So it's very difficult to find those numbers. Also, several states, including California, New York, and Washington, D.C., don't even report any of their abortion statistics. So all of this is quite elusive and difficult to know.
But so that's to the CDC.
Those states don't report.
But Planned Parenthood also keeps abortion statistics from all of its clinics. And sometimes those numbers are actually a little more accurate because, you know, they have clinics in California, for example, that report to them.
Yeah, so it's interesting to know that the Guttmacher Institute, which is the research arm of Planned Parenthood, these days actually gives us the best statistics that we have. Mm. We don't think that they're fully trustworthy, but we think that it's the best we have.
It's more accurate than the CDC numbers.
Correct.
Right. So, okay, so there are three main issues in discussing this topic of abortion pill reversal. So we start with safety, but then we also have to talk about effectiveness and then the demand for it. So can you unpack each of those three things for us, please?
Abortion pill reversal is safe, it's effective, and women given that second chance of choice are very, very grateful. As far as the safety, we found it to be very, very safe. The birth defect rate is the same as the general population. That is, it does not increase the rate of birth defects. So we're very happy about that. And in our large study, preterm births were actually lower in the women who, in the babies who had undergone abortion pill reversal compared to the general population. Now, as far as effectiveness, I already said that with our best protocols, it's a 68% success rate. Now, what does that compare to? Well, we look at old studies, and if women were given mifepristone and nothing else were done, mm-hmm. then the survival of the embryo or the fetus would be up to 25%, no higher than 25%. So we use 25% as a very conservative, defensible number, mm-hmm. and we know that the 68% is statistically significantly greater than 25% and much more significantly enhancement of survival.
Well, when the abortion advocates and abortion groups like Planned Parenthood say that we're spreading medical misinformation when we tell women that their pill abortions can be reversed, how do you respond to that as a physician?
Well, I say that we have three pillars of evidence. First is what we call biologic logic. If you look at different biological systems where there are two molecules competing for the same receptor, whether they'd be competing for an enzyme or for a hormone receptor, that if you raise the concentration of one, that one that has a higher concentration will outcompete the other one and will win the battle to the receptor, and its effect will be greater. So we know that with other systems. Number two, we have animal data. So the original studies developing mifepristone as a drug involved rats in Japan, where they gave one group of rats mifepristone and progesterone, the other group only mifepristone. The one that only got mifepristone aborted all their pups, while the pregnant rats that got progesterone either didn't abort any of their pups or they had a much lower rate of abortion, signifying that the progesterone stopped the effects of the mifepristone. More recently, Dr. Steven Samoon at Franciscan University has developed a rat model that closely mimics what's happening in humans, because in his model, the mifepristone is given first, the progesterone later. And his studies have shown that indeed the progesterone does reverse the effects of the mifepristone. And finally, we have our human data. We know that we've published a large study tracking more than 250 women with successful reversals. And we also know that we've documented over 4,000 successful reversals and births in women who've wanted that second chance at choice. So I think looking at it now, the evidence is irrefutable that abortion pill reversal is effective.
So 4,000 babies approximately. Over 4,000 in the United States have been saved.
Well, in the United States and some other countries, but mostly in the United States.
Who came up with the idea of attempting to reverse the effects of the abortion pill?
Well, two doctors did independently. The first one was Dr. Matthew Harrison in North Carolina, and he's on the board of directors of Steno Institute. And I came up with the same idea independent of him about a year and a half later. Both of us had situations where women had taken mifepristone, had regretted their decision, and reached out to us directly to Dr. Harrison, to me indirectly, wanting to know if there was a way to reverse the medical abortion.
Oh, that's wonderful. So I have been aware of, and I imagine you have seen as well, real pressure put on physicians not to suggest abortion pill reversal. And I think this pressure comes from things like, it comes from other doctors, it comes from either their medical networks or their insurance groups, or from management at a hospital, et cetera, et cetera. Have you seen this yourself in your practice, where there is really a very assertive and aggressive attempt to discourage medical professionals from even bringing up the topic of abortion pill reversal?
Yes, it is. It's really coming from the top. The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, which is an avowed promoter of abortion, they say so in their public statements, as well as Planned Parenthood, ACLU, and others, have characterized this as junk science and have no they're having no support at all. But it's purely ideological, because they are so much into the abortion agenda that anything that would threaten the narrative that abortion is a great good, then they're going to fight. And think about it. If you acknowledge that a woman has second thoughts and tries to stop her medical abortion, then you're acknowledging that for all women, abortion is not a great good, because at least some percentage of women are changing their minds. And if you look at the kind of statements they've put out, well, it really is contrary to good medical inquisitiveness and investigation, which is normally what they're supposed to support. And I kind of liken this to something like CPR. If you have a treatment that has no alternative and it has been shown to have some effectiveness and not to harm people, then of course you're going to pursue it, just like CPR was pursued. CPR was pursued without having randomized controlled placebo trials, which is what they're saying we need to do for abortion pill reversal. But abortion pill reversal has no alternative. These women want reversal, and it's been shown to be safe. So why not let people select that choice if they want it, until we wait for the bigger studies to come out, which we're planning to do in the future?
Well, is there any downside medically to the to giving women progesterone?
There's no downside. Progesterone has been used in pregnancy for over 50 years as a very long track record. The fertility doctors who perform IVF when their patients are pregnant, they routinely give them progesterone throughout the entire first trimester. So that shows you that they think it's very safe.
So there's no side effects from it?
No side effects, except for minor side effects like sleepiness. And the FDA in 1999 came out with a statement that progesterone is not associated with birth defects. So we're very, very comfortable with the safety profile.
So it's not what they call a teratogen, then?
It's not a teratogen, exactly. And just on the topic of teratogenicity or birth defects, the mifepristone has not been shown to cause birth defects. Our study was actually the largest study yet showing that babies exposed to it do not have higher risk of birth defects. And the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, which has been our nemesis in all of this, actually has come out with a statement in one of their practice bulletins saying that mifepristone is not associated with birth defects.
Okay. That's very helpful to know, because if you were listening, you know, just to mainstream media or Twitter feeds, you would think that it was women were actually endangering themselves.
They're really not. And oftentimes they'll quote a study by Dr. Mitchell Crennan that came out in 2020. And Dr. Crennan designed a study that was really to disprove abortion pill reversal. That was his intent. And he was quoted in a newspaper article saying that. Well, this study, after enrolling 12 patients, was stopped because three patients had bleeding and called the emergency 911 and went to the emergency department. And so they said, well, because of this, abortion pill reversal is not safe. We should not do it. But if you unpack that study and look at it, well, the study had two groups. Both groups got mifepristone. One group got a placebo pill after that. The other group got progesterone after that. This was to test progesterone's effectiveness. Well, the three women who called the 911, one of them was in the progesterone group, but when she got to the emergency department, they didn't have to do any treatment. It said she required no further care, i.e. she didn't need to be in the emergency room. She just had a failed reversal, which happens sometimes. The other two, however, were in the placebo group. They had not gotten progesterone. Both of them required emergency suction abortions, and one of them required transfusions. So if anything, Dr. Crennan's study demonstrated that not doing anything at all is unsafe, but that giving progesterone is safe. And by the way, his numbers were similar to ours. There was a 67% success rate in those who started on the progesterone path of survival at 2 weeks, and 33% in those who started the placebo path, i.e. no treatment. So although the numbers were small, only 12 patients, it did suggest that what we're doing, we're on the right track as far as both effectiveness and safety.
It's just incredible to me that this kind of information is kept from women to be able to make fully informed choices, which is what the other side always says that they support, right? Informed free choice. But
they say they're pro-choice, but they only want one choice. So that makes me think they're really not pro-choice.
Well, Vicki Thorne, who was the founder of Project Rachel, which is the Catholic Church's largest pro-life a ministry for women who have had abortions and men who are the fathers of aborted children as well, to help reconcile them back to the church and to the Lord. She had seen in her work and in the women in particular who came to her a very different kind of healing process, because unlike the surgical abortion where the abortion provider performs the abortion on the woman, in this case, the woman's the moral actor. She was taking the pill. And so the process for her to heal from doing that, and particularly if she passed the baby's remains on the toilet, as so many women do, and then she flushed, and there goes her child. I hate to be so graphic about it, but that's the experience of many, many women. And she had discerned a real need to find a different way to help those women and to minister to them, because the mechanics of it were so different from surgical abortion. Have you seen any of those particular types of manifestations of emotional distress or psychological distress afterwards?
I have, because it is a totally different dynamic, as you say. Not only are they totally forlorn by themselves in their bathroom, as you say, which the bathroom is kind of one of the sanctuaries of the house, but many times they're left with having to clean up their own blood because, like I said before, bleeding is higher in medical abortions and surgical abortions, 7 times more bleeding complications. So you know that on average, they're going to bleed a great deal more. So they're going to be on their hands and knees after aborting their own child in the toilet, cleaning up that blood, and oftentimes doing it all by themselves. And then the abortion center could be avoided as sort of the scene of the sin, if you could say that. However, the home can't be avoided because you're always there. You always have to go to the bathroom. You're always in your bedroom. So you're constantly revisiting the physical place where this happened. So psychologically, that can be very, very distressing, very difficult, and a totally different dynamic for healing. Not only is it emotionally more trying, but the studies have shown that medical abortion has 4 times the risk of complications compared to surgical abortions.
Mm. Right. And then women often feel too ashamed to even talk about that because, again, up until this point, they've been told it's like taking a Tylenol. And then when that's not their experience, they don't want to talk about it because they feel they're somehow dramatically different because they had such a bad experience with this particular method of abortion. Well, to add insult to injury, a group of Democratic attorneys general from around the country sued the FDA, wanting them to drop all remaining restrictions on the abortion pill and wanting them to declare that the abortion pill is safe, effective, that all remaining restrictions are unconstitutional. I know you're not an attorney, you're a doctor, but I know you have a lot of experience in this area. What is your response to these attorneys general, engaging in this kind of action against the FDA?
This kind of action, and really from a fundamental level, is totally reckless and agenda-driven. They're not concerned about women's health and the safety of women. We know they're not concerned about the preborn babies, but just looking at the women that they purport to represent, it's really not doing them just duty of protecting them. Because in reality, the mifepristone was approved by the FDA in very irregular ways. The study used to approve it was not even a randomized controlled placebo trial. Mm. And they said there was an exception because this was a great threat to women's health. But really, that abortion is not healthcare, and we have to be clear about that. And so they bent the rules. They broke the rules, first of all, to approve it. They finally did approve it with certain restrictions called the REMS restrictions, which provided some safety for women as far as mandatory reporting and how they had to take it. But then during the COVID pandemic, the Biden administration canceled those REMS restrictions. Now they've been permanently abolished. So this has led to a huge deregulation of the abortion industry, where women now are finding it much easier to gain access to these abortion drugs by mail order or simply telehealth encounters. Their health is going to be put at risk because they're not going to be screened sufficiently. They will not get ultrasounds. With no ultrasound, a tubal pregnancy can be missed. If a woman mischaracterizes bleeding from a tubal pregnancy as coming from a medical abortion, delays care, she could die in her own bathroom from bleeding if her tube ruptures. Also, women who are Rh negative will not be tested. And if 15% of all women are Rh negative, if her baby's Rh positive, the blood always does mix when there's an abortion. That could lead to sensitization of her immune system so that future pregnancies where she has Rh positive baby will be doomed to stillbirth. So we're seeing all this. We're also going to see that women not being dated correctly, women who aren't really pregnant getting mifepristone, women with IUDs in place forgetting about them. No one detects it by ultrasound. It's contraindicated to take mifepristone when you have an IUD placed. We're going to see social problems with this easy access with this deregulated abortion pill, with it becoming a tool of of sex traffickers, of rapists and child molesters. Mm-hmm. So all of this is going to happen, and thanks to the pressures like these AGs that are putting on, and thanks to the regulators who have taken off all of the restrictions.
Among the things that really stuck out to me from your Edify video, and listeners, just as an aside, we're going to include a link to Doctor's excellent Edify video in the show notes. But one of the things you point out is that, first of all, you point out that all of these tests that would be normal in any other kind of abortion, experience, an ultrasound, dating of the child's development, et cetera, testing for an ectopic pregnancy, testing for the Rh factor, but that women can get these pills through telehealth appointments. And what is always just mind-boggling is to think about the many things you have to have in-person doctor appointments for. For example, ADHD meds, you have to have an in-person appointment, a refill of sleeping pills that requires an in-person appointment with the doctor, but not for these abortion pills that have, as you've just described, can have very serious ramifications for women. And the way in which women's health is being played around with, like some kind of political football, It's just so appalling. And how do you, as a physician, if you're encountering, you know, your peers, for example, how do they justify this? I mean, just in terms of the way we conduct medical practice in every other area.
The only way they justify it is putting abortion as the very top priority, higher than even a woman's own health. That's the only way they justify it, and that's how they justify it, that this, quote, right to choose trumps all other rights, including the right to good, sensible health care.
Before we get to the next question, I just wanted to ask you, wherever you're listening to this podcast, please take a moment and leave us a review. That would really help us out. And if you're not subscribed, go do that as well, so that you don't miss out on any future conversations with us on the Edify podcast.
CVS and Walgreens, which are the two largest chains of drugstores and pharmacies in the United States, are now carrying abortion pills in many states in their stores. So they're now just widely available. Anyone can go in and pick them up. As you pointed out, Dr. Delgado, that doesn't just include pregnant women. That includes sex traffickers and, you know, fathers who may be abusing their daughters, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you don't need any kind of, again, because you don't need a prescription, you can just go in and buy them, no questions asked, right? And so—
Well, they still do need a prescription.
Do
they're pushing
okay.
to get it over the counter, but as of now, they still need a
okay.
prescription.
But there's a significant effort afoot to make certain that is not necessary
right.
at this point. So,
and Walgreens and CVS are also applying to get into the business of mail order abortion pill delivery.
Right.
So they're trying to cash in on this as much as they can.
What are your thoughts on how we as a pro-life community should respond to the fact that now these are just going to be flooding the market? And how can an organization like yours, which hopes to allow women to understand that this can be reversed if they've taken it, how do you reach these women? How do they find out about you other than a Google search?
Well, you know, the searches are very powerful, but what we want to do is educate everybody who might be around that woman. Because think about it, a woman who's getting an abortion pill online or through telehealth probably, certainly hasn't gone through even the rudimentary, quote, counseling they get at Planned Parenthood, and perhaps hasn't given it as much reflection as a woman who actually physically drives to a certain place and goes through a process of something that's a quasi-medical appointment. So we think that women are not, will probably have more chance of second thoughts and of changing their mind. So when they change their mind, they're going to turn to people who are trusted around them. They're also going to turn to doing online searches. So the online searches, we're working on that. We have a pretty good search optimization. We're also trying to get the word out with podcasts and other things so that it's just popping up more and more. But we want to educate the general public so that if it's your daughter or your granddaughter who comes to you and confides in you or your best friend, you can say, well, you know, I heard about this, that abortion pill reversal is safe and effective, and women who have that opportunity are really happy they did. We also want to touch medical professionals so that if she goes to her OBGYN or her family physician, or even a pediatrician, because we're seeing it in children, that doctor will know about this and say, well, you know, there is abortion pill reversal, and I've read about it, and what I've read is that it certainly seems very safe, and it seems effective. So maybe you should look into that, and then they can direct them to the website and the hotline, abortionpillreversal.com. So all of these ways we're trying to impact people who might have an influence, who might be in the sphere of influence of these women who might find themselves in those situations.
Right. Well, we've talked about a lot of the misconceptions, if you'll excuse the word, and falsehoods and outright lies that are propagated by the abortion industry. But what for you as a physician is the biggest lie that they promote?
Well, the biggest lie, of course, is that any one person has the right to take the life of another innocent person, even if that is the mother of that person. So that's the fundamental lie, is that women who are pregnant are somehow masters over the preborn baby, individual person that's inside of her. Instead of being this caretaker, which is what she really is, and doing whatever she can to protect that preborn baby, the notion is put in her head, the big lie, that she is the master and can decide if that baby lives or dies.
Dr. Delgado, you often hear abortion advocates say things like, abortion is healthcare and healthcare is a right. Is abortion healthcare?
Most certainly not. Abortion is not healthcare, because healthcare, as the word implies, or the two word implies, is you're caring for someone's health. You're doing something to enhance the health of an individual. You're either mitigating suffering treating disease or actually curing disease and saving lives. Abortion does none of those. It does not mitigate suffering. It creates more suffering. It does not cure any disease. It does not treat any disease. And it does not save lives. It actually kills a life of a preborn baby and severely negatively impacts the life of the mother. So really, abortion should not be called healthcare. It should be called a lifestyle decision. It's a decision a mother is taking in order to conform to the lifestyle that she wants.
And while the topic today is abortion pill reversal, there are so many stories in the news and even on popular TV shows like Grey's Anatomy about miscarriages and ectopic pregnancies, most specifically that women who have miscarried actually have an abortion to treat that miscarriage, so that miscarriage management is actually an abortion. Could you please clarify that for us?
Sure, that's an absolute falsehood, because when a miscarriage, by definition, the baby has died or is dying. So any treatment for that is to simply empty the contents of the uterus of an already dead baby, a baby that died naturally, as opposed to abortion, which is killing a live, healthy baby. Same thing goes with ectopic pregnancy treatment. There, the treatment is directed at saving the life of the mother whose tube is at maybe rupturing. And so in saving the life of the mother, the foreseen but unwanted second consequence is that the life of that preterm baby, if it's still alive, may be ended early. But oftentimes in a tubal pregnancy, the baby's already dead anyway.
90% of all the cases, I believe.
Probably about 90%. Yeah. But even if the preborn baby is still alive, the act itself is of curing the mother of a life-threatening disease. And so it is not a direct killing of the preborn baby, which is what abortion is, the direct killing of a preborn baby. And I'll also add that all of the laws so far on the books that have outlawed abortion have had stipulations just to make it clear that treatments for tubal pregnancies and miscarriages are not included in these prohibitions. So to conflate the two is really just a strategy by those pursuing the abortion agenda.
So a woman who has had a miscarriage and then does not pass the child's remains naturally and has to go into the hospital to have generally a D&C, she is not having an abortion.
She is not having an abortion, that's correct. She's having just a D&C to treat her miscarriage.
Well, why don't we end on a positive note? Can you share with our listeners any real-life stories of women who met with your organization and who successfully and effectively reversed their abortions?
Sure. There's a woman who comes to mind. Her name is Cynthia, and she and her boyfriend found themselves in a crisis pregnancy. She went to the abortion center and found out that she could take the pill abortion. She went to talk to her mother. Her mother tried to dissuade her, was unsuccessful at dissuading her, eventually took herself to the appointment, and she took the mifepristone there. Afterwards, her mother felt very, very guilty for what she had done. So her mother went to confession, and the priest happened to know about abortion pill reversal and said, well, you know, there's abortion pill reversal. And he put her in contact with me. Her daughter, who was pregnant, reluctantly agreed to come to the office and have an ultrasound. She came in with her boyfriend, the father of the baby. She was really fighting it every step of the way. We put the ultrasound transducer on there. As soon as she saw the baby, I said, look, your baby has a heartbeat. And the heart was beating. You could see the baby. She started crying. Her boyfriend started crying. And she decided right there she wanted to try to reverse that medical abortion. We started on progesterone that night, and she was successful. And now she has a very, very lovely child, and she would give the world for that child. And her husband says that, now husband, they got married, that we were instrumental in saving their lives as a couple and as a family.
Well, God bless you for everything that you do, Dr. Delgado, and thank you for sharing that beautiful story with us and with our listeners. And we certainly will be keeping you and your good work in our prayers, and we're so grateful that you took the time to be with Edify today. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for listening. To make it easier for you to listen to future Edify podcast episodes, please make sure you subscribe over at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Thank you.